Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Judy Schwenk and her guests, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of her guests this evening, you can press star 3, that's star 3 on your phone's keypad, if you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of her guests. So now I'd like to welcome Senator Judy Schwenk.
Thank you, Hugh. Really appreciate your help with this call, and thank you to everybody who has called in tonight. I'm glad that you're taking this, you know, opportunity to learn more about how we deal with, you know, some of the severe storms that we've been seeing in Berks County. It's just coincidence, by the way, that, you know, we hear that there are two hurricanes heading for the Gulf Coast, and we don't necessarily know what the impacts will be. But, you know, we are in the middle of hurricane season, and it's not unusual that we will have strong storms. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, we did face some really huge rain events and wind events. People were out of power. People had significant damage, you know, to their personal property, to, you know, their homes and landscapes. And we had municipal damage as well. So there are all sorts of things that were out there. Maybe you have a question on. So what we've done is we brought together, I think, some of the top experts in terms of how to deal with these problems. First, an old and reliable friend, Brian Gottschall, who is the director of the Berks County Department of Emergency Services. I'll run through the list, and then I'm going to ask each individual just to say a few things. Jean Johnston, who is manager of Kumru Township, so she's got that municipal experience. Dave Buono, who is the consumer liaison from the Pennsylvania Insurance Federation of Pennsylvania, and also Jonathan Greer, who is from senior vice president from the Insurance Federation of Pennsylvania, and Dave is consumer liaison from the Pennsylvania Insurance Department. Sorry for that confusion, folks. So let's start with you, Brian. You know, what exactly is your role, and what have we seen in Berks County?
Thanks, Senator. Yes, my role tonight is to talk to any of your constituents who are interested in information about our recovery process as it relates to our efforts to get a federal declaration of disaster that is inclusive of Berks County. And certainly I can go into more detail as we go through the town hall tonight about how that process works and where we're at in Berks County, but probably the one thing I want to say that's of overarching interest with respect to that is how different this process is to any other process we've ever undertaken in this regard. I've worked for the county since 1993, and I don't even know how many presidentially declared disasters I've participated in my various roles in the county, but never before have we gone through the process in the way that we are now because of COVID. This is being referred to, like everything else these days, as a virtual damage assessment. There's a lot of reliance on self-reporting, on photographs, and we're doing a whole lot of work on our end with respect to getting information about this damage into the necessary state and federal systems so that the governor and ultimately FEMA and the president can evaluate the nature of the impacts to both our private citizens and business owners, as well as to our municipal governments and other similar authorities who suffered damage and unexpected expenses as a result of the storm system. So I think I'll pause there. That's a pretty good overarching answer, and I'll wait for any specific questions or any interest you have in delving into those details more deeply.
That sounds great. Thank you, Brian. Next, Jean Johnston. Jean, I've known for years as well, too. Jean is a long time, you know, individual in local government with a lot of experience. Jean, will you talk a little bit about what you do and your experience has been?
Certainly, and thank you for inviting me to this. My job in a disaster emergency is one, to help our emergency management coordinator determine when a disaster emergency should be declared for the township on the municipal level, and to coordinate the flow of information to Brian's office so that we can document the both private and public damage from an incident, and that will go into the evaluation of whether a higher level declaration of disaster emergency occurs and then possibly even funds later. Obviously, also, we're concerned with the very immediate needs of residents during or right after storms, such as blocked roads and other things that occur of that nature. And our job is to document to get the resources there and to document what resources we have used so that possibly in the future, if federal funds are released, that the municipality can apply to get some of that money reimbursed, which is, of course, later on a savings to the taxpayer.
Right, right. So there are multiple roles to be played in this event, but when you're the homeowner experiencing this, you know, you don't really always know what to do, right? So that's part of the reason for this telephone town hall, so people can be informed about what are the first steps to take. And then turning next to you, Dave, want to explain your position a bit? What role does state government have here in terms of insurance?
Absolutely. Good evening, everyone. And Senator Schwenk, on behalf of Commissioner Altman, thank you for inviting the Pennsylvania Insurance Department to your town hall. There are many individuals on this call that I probably have not heard of the Pennsylvania Insurance Department. So let me tell you a little bit about us. The department was first established under the Act of Assembly on April 4th, 1873. It is our responsibility to provide a regulatory environment that promotes an insurance marketplace to serve all Pennsylvanians. To accomplish this, we promote a competitive and robust marketplace. We educate consumers to make informed decisions and ensure that they are treated fairly. We regulate insurance company financial solvency in order to ensure fair and expedient payment of consumer claims. We administer legislatively enacted programs to maximize benefits of the consumer. We assure that insurance policies meet standards of high quality, are understandable, and are appropriately priced. We license all insurance companies and agents. We provide licensing programs to those individuals that promote professionalism and competency in the marketplace. And I just want to thank you again for inviting the insurance department to participate. And, you know, I want to make sure that everyone knows that we are here if you need us.
Very good. Thank you. And also thanks to the commissioner for allowing you to be able to be with us tonight. And then finally, Jonathan, in terms of the commercial insurance industry, what can you offer us? What do you do?
Thank you, Senator. And again, my name is Jonathan Greer. I am Senior Vice President of the Insurance Federation of Pennsylvania. The Insurance Federation is a state trade association, so we represent insurance companies of all lines. So in this case, homeowner insurers, maybe even auto insurers, are part of our membership. And what we do is we work with regulators like Dave or legislators like Senator Schwenk on issues of importance to the marketplace and the general public. I think that we work pretty well on both fronts, and I think that many times the insurance companies are the entities that people, unfortunately, I think people think of their insurance companies only after the fact or their insurance policies and not before something happens. And you know, one of the things that I'd like to stress today is the need to be an informed consumer and to know ahead of time what is covered, what is not, because I think knowing that going in and knowing what questions you need to have answered are much better asked before something happens as opposed to after.
Absolutely true, to be prepared for certain. So, maybe I'll start things off, Hugh, unless we have some calls or questions that have come in. And, Brian, I'm going to start. We do?
Yeah, okay. We have some calls and we have some questions. And I just a little housekeeping here, just a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of our guests this evening, you press *3. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. So, Senator, it's up to you. We can go to the callers now, or if you want to lead off Nope,
I'd much rather hear from the folks who have questions. Let's get to those. Thanks, Hugh.
Okay. Our first caller tonight, we're going to go to Matthew in Muhlenberg. Matthew, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Senator Schwenk. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling in.
Just a quick question. For us in Muhlenberg and a lot of residents on Grandel Avenue in Muhlenberg, we experienced some devastating flooding on the morning of Sunday, August 2nd, a couple days before the actual tropical storm, with a freak rainstorm when we got 7.5 inches of rain in about 2 hours' time, and most of our street basements were completely destroyed. So, and pretty much everybody I've spoken to has no flood insurance, and we're pretty much out all the contents of our basement. And we were just wondering, everyone on our street is just wondering how the process for declaring an emergency is going, how the assessment is going, getting all the damage totals together to see if there will ever be any FEMA assistance for any of us.
That's a great lead off, Matthew. And first, let me say I'm sorry that happened. I know what that feels like to, you know, not expect this damage and the expense associated and the hard work with cleaning up. To me, that's always the worst part. And generally, it's hot when this happens, so it's not a pleasant experience. So, Brian, where are we in terms of, you know, those huge rainfall that occurred August 1st and August 2nd? You know, what communities were impacted, and have all the assessments done? Where are we at in that process?
Thanks, Senator. Yes, same for me, Matt. I'm sorry to hear about the damage that you and your neighbors there sustained in that storm. Before I get into the details of that, I want to give a little bit of background about the process, because tied into the question, there was a little bit of a misunderstanding, I think, about how the process works, and it's echoed in questions that we received immediately following the storm when some people contacted the county commissioners and were very upset that the county didn't declare a disaster. So I know this is confusing because of the terminology that's used, and I'd like to kind of deconflict a little bit of that if I could, Senator.
I think it's a good place to start. Go for it.
Okay, so often we'll hear about local governments or the county declaring a disaster emergency. And that's an act that's taken, hopefully, in advance of a disaster when it's one that we can plan for, or sometimes immediately following a disaster, that in essence alleviates the government unit from some of the obligations that it has under state law. Things like putting contracts out for bid and restrictions on the ability to employ temporary workers. By making that declaration of disaster emergency, we take some of those rules and regulations off the book and give the governmental unit, whether it's local or the county or the state, the ability to respond more fluidly to the emergency. In the case of this storm, for example, whether we're talking about Isaias or the isolated storm system that happened just prior to Isaias that we're discussing here, there was really no need for the county or anyone else to make that declaration of disaster because we're already operating under the COVID declaration of disaster.
That's a good point.
That's different than what we're trying to do now, which is to secure a presidential disaster declaration to assist folks that had damage. So I don't want anybody to believe that because their local government or the county failed to kind of run the flag up the pole, it compromised the individual resident or business's ability to get assistance after the fact. The way that we get that presidential declaration of disaster is 100% based on our ability to demonstrate a significant impact to the local jurisdiction. And it's an ugly, ruthless process. I've stood in front of families who have lost everything and had no insurance to cover it, and had to explain to them that there was no possibility of them getting any assistance in this regard because not enough people around them suffered similar losses. I mean, that's a pretty tough system when you have to tell somebody who lost everything, I'm sorry, if more people would have lost everything, there'd be a means to help you out. But because not enough people lost enough, there's nothing to be done. So that kind of takes us to this next step of the storm system that happened prior to Isaias. There are some, for lack of a better term, scientific or meteorological obligations that happen with respect to when damage can be aggregated together. And the fact of the matter is that I do not believe there is going to be adequate damage, there's going to be adequate scientific evidence that the storm systems, the first storm system and Isaias, were linked together to be considered a single storm system in order for damage that happened in that prior storm to be included in the assessment. We have right now about 28 individual assessments attributed to that first storm system, and we, of course, are entering that information. We're pushing it up to the state, but ultimately they will have to consider whether or not they view that as being adequate to move forward to the federal government level. And then the federal government will have to decide whether they're going to view that as a single event, in essence a separate damage event, or aggregated in with the Isaias damage. What we want is for it to be aggregated in, because it gives those folks much better chance of being part of a declared disaster from FEMA, from the president.
So, Brian, if that is declared, let's say that it is, what can residents or businesses expect in terms of assistance?
Sure. So the what can they expect in terms of the process is a little bit confusing, because as I mentioned in my intro, this is the first time we've ever done this virtually. So I'm going to speak about it in the context of how it normally works, but understand that some of this may change. Where I say that someone may visit you with a clipboard and pencil, you may end up being asked to provide more photographic documentation that you have to submit through a web portal, for example. But what folks could expect is, if there is a declaration of disaster from FEMA, there will be a portal opened up, a web portal opened up, and folks will actually go in there and apply. We always want people to report their damage to the local government so that the local emergency management coordinator and their team can go out and assess that damage and catalog it, because if we don't get enough people doing that, we're not able to demonstrate a case to the state and federal government that we should be included in a declaration. A lot of times we have people that kind of don't do that. They aren't willing to go to the effort because they don't know if there's going to be anything to their benefit on the back end. And it really becomes a chicken and egg problem. If we don't have people willing to do the work up front, there's no chance for the assistance on the back end. In this case, I believe, based on the amount of damage we've already aggregated, that we're going to have no issue getting what is called a Small Business Administration declaration. Again, a confusing term, because people hear Small Business Administration and they say, hey, my house was flooded. How does that help me? Well, the fact of the matter is that in this model, if you will, in the disaster model, the Small Business Administration steps up and doesn't only help businesses, they also help individual property owners by making available very low interest rate loans. So you have to have some reasonable credit. They're not going to give a loan to somebody who has no apparent ability to pay it back, but the obligations for creditworthiness are significantly lower than they might be in the commercial marketplace, and the interest rate is extremely low also. We won't know the specifics about that interest rate until the declaration comes through. The next level beyond that for businesses and homeowners is called IA, or individual assistance. Individual assistance may open up some other doors, including potentially grant programs where individuals may be able to get some money from the federal government that is not expected to be repaid, or expanded loan programs. So we don't ever really know what the outcome is going to be, whether it's going to be grants or loans, and what the nature of those are going to be until the declaration comes down the pike. But once we know that, the portal will be open, people will be able to apply, and if you are somebody that didn't report your damage to the local government, there's no need to scramble and do that now and have the local coordinator come out. But we're kind of over that hurdle, and you won't be precluded from applying for assistance if the declaration is offered, even if you haven't previously been assessed by your local government.
Okay, that's good to know. Now, inherent, Matthew, I hope you're still listening, but inherent in your question was also, well, none of us had insurance. So for this, we couldn't have anticipated this. So Jonathan, what is the, you know, what should people be thinking about when, you know, you have these types of events? How can we prepare ourselves? Should we get a rider on our homeowner's insurance? I mean, some people didn't live in a floodplain, so they didn't necessarily have, you know, flood insurance per se. How can you explain that to us?
Sure. I welcome the opportunity to explain this, Senator. So thank you for bringing that into play here. So as you mentioned and as the caller mentioned, a traditional homeowner's insurance policy typically does not include flood insurance, flood coverage for flooding. That is a separate policy, and that is a policy that is written either through the federal government, the National Flood Insurance Program, which is administered by FEMA. And there are also some private commercial companies that will also write it. And the problem is, as you say, you know, if people don't live in a floodplain, they may think that they don't have, you know, there's no need for a flood insurance policy. But, you know, one of the things that the NFIP likes to say is everybody lives in a floodplain. No matter where you're at, no one is immune from flooding. And so, and what is flooding exactly? Typically flooding is when water, either surface water or groundwater, goes from outside the house into the house. So that would be on the first floor or into the basement. And that's typically the basement issue is I think the most common. And unfortunately, that's where a lot of things, whether it's finished or not, your furnace is probably down there. Your washer and dryer may be down there. Your water heater may. So big things that make your house run day in, day out are down there and are potentially going to be damaged or destroyed. So what people should think about going forward is to look into the possibility of a flood insurance policy going forward, and that will cover them for the damage to their contents that result from the flooding. The other thing that may have happened, I don't know all the details of what happened with these two storms earlier in the month, but I did look online, and it is, some of the pictures were nothing short of biblical. We hear occasionally about sewer backup too, and that may happen with rains of the nature that you experienced.
It did happen to a lot of people.
Okay. Yeah, and it depends on the policy, but that is generally excluded as well. However, unlike flood insurance, some companies will provide an endorsement, which means sort of an added layer of coverage for that. So you can, it varies, but you can potentially purchase that as an endorsement to your homeowner's insurance policy. And again, that is a question that homeowners should consult with either their insurer or their agent to see if that's available to them, what the cost is, what the limitations or exclusions may be. But that's another common problem with this kind of weather event. So, Senator, anything else you'd like me to touch on that front?
No, I maybe we'll get more questions regarding that, but I think that's a good start. Hugh, are there other ones queued up for us there?
We do have some other questions, but just as a reminder for those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of her guests this evening, you can press *3, that's *3 on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of her guests, press *3 on your phone's keypad. We'll get you screened and on the line with the Senator. Senator, we're going to go to Gloria. Gloria, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and her guest.
Hi, Gloria.
Okay. Hi. Hi to everyone. My question is, we don't have a catastrophic event as yet, but we live on Ashbourne Drive. I believe the development is, you know, actually called Whitfield Hills. And the 222 corridor between 183 and 61, The trees directly in back of not only our house, but a lot of our neighbors' homes are very close to our house in that corridor. And they're dead. Now, I've been trying to see when they were going to come, the state, and cut them down since last year. Our neighbors won't even sleep in the back of their house because they're afraid there's going to be a storm and these trees are going to come down on their bedrooms, which most of us have bedrooms in the back. So the last thing we had heard that it went out on bid, but we're not seeing anything, we're not hearing anything, no one's getting back to us. And we're very concerned about whose liability is it going to be if they start coming down on the back of our house, because that corridor in the back there gets very windy. Sometimes it it actually sounds like a train's going through there. That's how windy it gets.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, yeah.
Go ahead. So that's a PennDOT right-of-way. Is that correct, Gloria?
Yes.
Yes. So that would be a PennDOT project. I mean, I can't specifically answer it myself. I don't know if any of my experts here can tonight, but we can find out later if we don't know now. Brian, any thoughts on that at all?
No, Senator, I apologize. I'm not familiar with the location nor the matter at hand, but that doesn't surprise me given it involves the private property owners in the state. I can certainly reach out to our PennDOT County manager if you'd like me to take care of that, and perhaps one of the screeners could get the callers specific information in that regard.
We can do that as well. I just thought you might have some information. Gloria, we will get back to you on that. We're pretty frequent contact with them. So
I did call your office and talk to a girl there, but she was going to get back to me, and she hadn't. I said, I've made many, many calls on this, and we did have one tree come down. We heard it, and it was quite a large branch of one of these trees, and it hit our shed and smashed it, but that's no big thing. Luckily, it came between our neighbor and our house. Now, of course, that was our liability, so we got rid of it, you know, mm-hmm. we took care of it, but like I said, if they start coming down on somebody's actual house, we're going to have some problems and maybe some near-death or death experiences, depending on how they come down.
Well, so. Gloria, I hope you you gave your phone number, I think, in terms of, the call or call me back tomorrow in the office, and we'll get your contact information. We'll follow up on it.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay, you bet. So in terms of, Gene, you're a municipal official. You're probably on the very front lines when something happens. Now, I know Kumru didn't have the significant flood damage from the most recent incidents, but you've had others on Angelica and Allegheny Creeks. What are the things that you as a township do to assist homeowners? And the other one, the question, the point came up from Jonathan about sewer backups. How does the township help?
Well, thank you for asking. First of all, one of the biggest things is calling in staff. Now, everyone should keep in mind for both municipalities and state employees and county employees, sometimes during a disaster emergency, just getting the employees to the township building or wherever their place of work is also difficult. They're coming in from other locations. But the first thing that we can do is activate employees in order to evaluate the calls that are coming in. Again, assuming people can call, also keep in mind that sometimes during disasters, the communications are disrupted. But getting those employees here, clearing the roads when the event is over. Obviously, we can't do it, no one can do it in dangerous conditions. Getting it out on the website and other means about what roads may be closed. That kind of, some real basic just infrastructure stuff. And we want people to call in when they have issues, even if the municipality is not able to do something about that issue right away. And here's an example of why. It helps us determine patterns over time. Even if what the person is experiencing doesn't rise to a level where we can do anything about it, if we look back over several storms and we see the same patterns occurring, that helps us determine steps in regard to infrastructure or maybe engineering studies or things like that. Sewer backups become very, very difficult, not only because of the nature of the material, of course, but what happens is groundwater and surface water in these extreme storms gets into the sewer system and literally overloads the sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
if there are circumstances where codes would require that somebody put in a backflow preventer in their house. If a person has ever been told that you should get a backflow preventer, look into that. If somebody has a backflow valve already, they need to close it, know how to use it, exercise that valve periodically. Sometimes in regard to sewer backups, there's not a lot that can be done until things recede. But in Kumru, we ask people to call us first so we can see if there's an actual blockage in addition to maybe an overload of rainwater in the system. And of course, long term, it's our job to upgrade the system to keep as much rainwater and surface water out of the system as possible. That saves everybody money, that saves everybody certainly aggravation, it's just an ongoing process, investing in the sewer system. Hopefully that answered your question, Senator.
Oh, it does, Jean, and your expertise comes through very clearly. I think people should consider their township government or their municipal government in terms of how responsive they are and the kind of information that is provided. I think Kumru does an excellent job. They're not the only ones, obviously, but you do an excellent job there of keeping people informed and, you know, helping them to prepare for things like this. A sewer backup is not a pleasant thing. So, right?
Yeah, absolutely not. One thing I wanted to reflect on your first caller about the storm in Muhlenberg. One of the interesting, in an unpleasant way, thing about that storm and about many of the other storms over the past couple of years, we've had these record rainfalls. Some of these storms are very, very targeted in where they occur. In Muhlenberg, they had 7 inches of rain. In Kumru, we had less than one during that same storm. Sometimes people will call us from one end of the township and say, oh my gosh, this thing is occurring. Why don't you know about this? And the reason we don't know about it is not happening here at our office. So that's another reason that we encourage people to call, is that literally sometimes if we're in the office or our forces are deployed elsewhere, we might not know what's happening. It's easy in this day and age to think that we may have eyes and ears everywhere, but we really don't. And so we do encourage people to call and let us know what's happening in their area, because we might not be aware of it yet.
Okay. Good advice. Very good advice. Hugh, are there more questions coming forward?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have a number of people want to ask you and your guest questions this evening. But again, before we do, just a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Schwenk or guest, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Dave in Shillington. Dave, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guest.
Hi, Senator. How are you this evening?
Very good. Thank you.
My question may appear trivial compared to the hardship that many of your callers have experienced. However, I think everyone would agree that the museum, the Reading Museum, in the Wyomissing West Reading area is a treasure to everyone in the county. And its use for walking and biking daily, hundreds of us enjoy it. My wife and I are up in age a little bit, but we try to ride each and every day. And the storm has washed out from the creek, has washed out the portions of the trail, and it is becoming dangerous in some respects. I know that they're making an effort to keep this area nice and attractive to everyone. It's Wyomissing and West Reading and the Reading Museum, and they do a wonderful job. It's certainly a beautiful area. However, the storm has damaged portions of it, of the creek, and is there funding available to help out the museum and the boroughs affected for recreation, as it's used by not just people from the West Reading and Wyomissing area, but from all over the county on a daily basis? Thank you for taking my question, Senator.
Sure. And yes, there is funding. Just recently, the state announced grants to assist municipal governments in terms, they call them H2O projects or water and sewer projects, and there is funding available to municipalities that apply for work that would mitigate some of the problems that they're facing. And usually we get a high number of requests because municipal governments are understanding how maybe just because of these unusual rain events or changes in our weather patterns that stormwater runoff is a significant problem. Not only does it cause, you know, flooding like you've talked about in residential areas, in our parks, but it also can damage, much of the infrastructure that a municipality has in place. Just after the last storm, I went up to Lower Alice's Township and looked at the creek that goes by the Antietam Creek going by the school district, and it literally washed out a stone wall that, you know, I don't know how long it was there, at least 30 or 40 years, and that's going to have to be repaired. And so municipalities look for that kind of funding to be available. So, yes, there is that kind of funding. The municipality has to apply for it. And generally, they don't get all of what they want, but they get a significant portion of it. And we try very hard to advocate to make sure that, some of the biggest problems do get corrected. But you're right. This, it's kind of a whole system of things, isn't it? And in the case of Muhlenberg Township, I think it's the Laurel Run Creek that has been one of the reasons why folks like Matt and others found themselves subjected to flooding. And that's a creek that this has happened a number of times. And what has happened is that we've sent a letter to DEP asking them to come out and take a look at this so they can make some recommendations on, what the Muhlenberg Township can do to help resolve some of the problems. So, yeah, the state has to be a partner and the federal government. Our funds come both from the federal government as well to help mitigate some of these things. It's a good question.
Senator, I can speak to that also a bit if you don't mind.
Thank you, Brian.
Sure. It was almost like we paid Dave to help us transition to the next step of federal assistance, and he wasn't a plant. That was an honest question.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke a little bit about IA, individual assistance. The other aspect of the potential assistance that comes under the Stafford Act, what people think of as FEMA money, is called PA, or public assistance. And that's money that's available to generally governmental units or pseudo-governmental operations. An example might be a private nonprofit hospital or a fire company that is a private nonprofit, generally entities that serve a role that, but for their existence, would be provided for by a government unit. And in this case, of course, the museum is an example of that. When it comes to PA, the federal government is looking again at how much damage did we have, and they're looking at this both at the county level as well as at the state level, and it's based on a dollar amount per capita, and we have to demonstrate damages that cross that threshold in order to be included. Right now, for Isaias, the state has demonstrated about $28.5 million, which is about $10 million over the state's PA threshold. Berks County is at about $4.25 million, which is about $2.75 million over our threshold. So again, I have reasonable confidence that the feds are going to look at our PA request and grant that. The next question then becomes, what categories do they grant us in? There are a number of different categories. I'm not going to belabor with all the details, but one of those categories is parks, recreational areas, and other similar facilities. And that would be an example of what the caller was asking about with respect to the museum. So we're looking for a PA grant under that category that would allow our governmental units to recover the cost of restoration and repairs to those types of facilities. Also, when we get a declaration of disaster, we also open up the opportunity for what are called mitigation dollars. And mitigation grants are intended to stop future events from being as impactful either to life, or property. So, for example, if there is an area that floods frequently and that can be improved in a way that a future flood would have lesser damage and create a lesser need for then a disaster assistance application at that time, those disaster mitigation dollars become eligible to have that project be funded. And we in my office at Emergency Services manage a countywide disaster mitigation plan that is updated approximately every 4 to 5 years with input from all of our local government entities. And it's very important, generally, in order to get funding for a mitigation project, the project has to be recognized in that county plan that is then subsequently approved by the state and federal government. So it's really important when we have areas like this that have significant impacts that those needs get rolled into the disaster mitigation plan so that we have the opportunity to fund them down the road either through competitive pre-disaster mitigation grants or after an event when we're able to tie the damage that happened to the identified project and assert that it's going to preclude us from having more impactful or further damage down the road.
Okay, so in addition to dealing with the damage after it happens, we have programs that I outlined and you outlined as well that will help prevent some of this damage from happening as well. So I'm going to quickly turn to Dave because I want to get this in and then hopefully get back to questions. But Dave, some of us experience, some of our homeowners have damage, and they're going to need somebody to help them repair some of this. What advice can you give to homeowners regarding that so that they're insured that, the dollars that they have to fix the problems are well used?
Sure. No, that's a great question. And following any kind of disaster, it's overwhelming and it's stressful. And it can be even more confusing when you're trying to report that claim. So, some things that folks should do is contact your insurance company as soon as possible. Follow the instructions that the insurer gives you and keep record of the people you spoke with. Be sure that you save all of your receipts. Be sure to give your insurance company all the information they need. You don't want to delay your claim handling. Take photographs or video before cleanup of debris. And after you've documented the damage, make sure the repairs are, after you document it, make sure that you fix things so there's not further damage. But don't make the repairs permanent repairs. Just, mitigate additional damage. Always ask questions if you don't understand. Don't rush to settlement. If you and your insurance company disagree, be prepared to talk that through. And if your claim is denied, review the terms of your policy for what is not covered. And you may be able to appeal that to a claims manager at the insurance company. Or if questions remain and you feel that the insurance company is not treating you fairly, you can contact the insurance department's Bureau of Consumer Services. Really quick, some things that you want to be careful of. Sometimes disasters can be a magnet for dishonest people. So be wary of anyone that knocks on your door and offers to do your home repairs or your business repairs. If a person presents themselves as a public adjuster, ask for their licensing information. A public adjuster is a professional claims handler who is licensed and regulated by the state. A public adjuster is employed by you and the policy as the policyholder to assist with the claims process. Be sure that you, if you're going to hire a contractor, be sure you check references and licenses and everything in writing. Don't sign paperwork with blank sections because they can be filled in later. Don't pay a contractor in full or sign that work is complete until it's actually done. And be cautious of contractors with work vans and trucks that have out-of-state license plates or lack of signs or insignias identifying the company. So those are just a couple of things that that I can think of off the top of my head.
But it's good advice, and it's very much appreciated. Hugh, can we go back to calls if there are any?
Yep, Senator, we'll go back. We can go to Patricia. Patricia, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi, Patricia. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thank you, Senator. I'm calling because I live out on Coffee Lane in Kutztown at Coffee Lane and Noble Street, mm-hmm. and we never really had any flooding issues here until they built Advantage Point apartment complex for students for Kutztown University. I know I addressed this with you when they were building it, and we had DEP come out and do some work and all. And since we've had these heavy rains, we have had flooding where the police and fire police have had to come out and close Noble Street because it has been completely flooded. Our lane has been flooded. The pumping station for Maxatone Township, which is off of Coffee Lane, has been completely underwater. It has been a disaster since. And like I said, we have never had flooding here until they did that. I don't understand why we're still having to deal with this because of them building that building and having, you know, the poor retention pond. Can't something else be done? I mean, the neighbors have been with 30 plus inches of water the last three rains that we had in this month each time. And it's not fair to us because of a building being built when we haven't had this problem.
I understand what you're saying. So have you reported first to the township? That's not in the borough. That's in Maxatone Township, right?
Right. Yes. And they know because they have to come out here and reset the pumping station. And so they're aware that, you know, that this is all underwater.
Well, maybe what we
every
do,
time a heavy rain.
Yeah, that's not pleasant. Maybe what we can do is have another conversation with the township, and try to see what they're observing, and possibly ask DEP to take a look at it again. It's the thing of it is the building is there now, so that's, you know, and sometimes the construction is not necessarily sufficient for what, you know, the kinds of environmental incidences that can come up, like heavy rainfall. So I'll follow up with the township and see what they're thinking about it and what they've observed.
Okay, because I do know the retention pond was bone dry before the storm
before it
hit.
Happened. Yeah, but then
there
it filled
was
up
no water in it, and that's how quickly that filled up and flooded us out.
Yeah, sometimes that's hard to even, you know, plan for. It simply seems like the weather has changed a lot, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
Right. But we'll call. We'll check in with the township.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other calls, Hugh, there? Well, let's go to once again, Brian. You know, we've talked a lot about what people have faced. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, this is Bruce Rohrbach, Senator Schwenk.
Thank you. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call. This addresses Patricia's previous call about that Vantage Point. We are the owners of the farmland that is being flooded by Advantage Point runoff, and the water has been heavy the past 2 years. Before DEP granted that permit and that building plan, we asked them not to do this. Mm-hmm. And they went ahead anyway, saying that they had approval by DEP. We've been going to DEP, the Berks Conservancy Group. We contacted your office. We have attended all the Maxatone Township meetings the past year. They will not even allow us to address the board now. And the problem is the runoff from Advantage Point. They were granted approval to create swales along the perimeter of their 30 acres. And it is draining directly through a 3-foot pipe that Maxatone installed under the road directly onto our property. It's washing out our crops and it's flooding the neighbors down the road. So this is a problem with Maxatone Township. They will not close off that pipe because they say DEP gave them permission. So what can we do?
Well, that's something that I guess we have to go back to DEP and the township and have a conversation regarding that.
Please, we would approve. Like I said, we've been doing this for 2 years, and everybody stonewalls us. And I feel for these people that are being flooded down there, and nobody will listen to us.
It can be very frustrating, can it? Sometimes things work the way we want them to, sometimes not. But I'll certainly try to see if if there's any possible intervention that we can make.
I'll
follow up on it. I can't promise results, but I'll follow up on it.
I understand. The point is we went to all the parties involved before they started construction and asked them not to do this, and they ignored us. In fact, they even joked about it. The project manager texted me by accident, and he told Chris Paff from the township, no charge for the extra watering. We haven't even put the pipe in yet. And Dean Druckenmiller from DEP told us flippantly, well, what did you expect was going to happen? That's the kind of attitude we're getting from everybody all the way up the chain. It's very frustrating for everybody.
I can understand why it is. I promise you, we will make those connections. I'm taking notes, believe me. Thank you. Thanks for calling in and letting me know.
Thank you, Bruce. I had a little user error, technical difficulty on my part there. I'm back alive. So we're going to go to Evelyn. Evelyn, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Good evening, Senator. Thank you for hosting the town hall.
Oh, sure. Thanks for calling in, Evelyn.
I live in Mountainboro, and my question relates to hail damage. I've been watching the thunderstorms. You know, this summer, they seem to be getting more intense and more violent. Wondering if the insurance folks could comment on the process one has to go through for dealing with hail damage.
That's an excellent question. I'll turn to Dave and Jonathan. Jonathan, maybe you want to start off.
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Senator. Evelyn, when you say hail damage, are you talking about damage to a roof, or are you talking about damage to the side of a house, or for that matter, to cars?
As well as, let's start with roofs, and if there's time left, maybe you can address what happens if it hits siding on a house.
Okay, so with respect to hail damage on a roof, if you've notice that, you know, after a storm that involved hail and you believe that there's damage from that, you should call your insurance carrier to have an adjuster come out to inspect the damage to see if in fact it's a covered event. You know, one of the things that I should have mentioned earlier is, you know, one of the sort of bright line tests in homeowner policies generally is what I'll call sudden and accidental. So it was as I suggest, sudden, and it was not anticipated. And the problem sometimes arises with insurance claims is that there might have been an underlying maintenance issue that precipitated some of the subsequent damage, that maybe a leak in the roof or something like that. That's obviously very case specific, but if there is damage to the roof that was caused by a specific event involving hail, the first thing you should do is call your insurance company and say, hey, I think I have hail damage. Can someone come out and take a look? With respect to siding, it gets a little dicier because the purpose of the policy is to get that home to its pre-loss condition. And so let's say that it has, for argument's sake, let's just say it has vinyl siding. And the vinyl siding is a certain color. But the hail damage only affected, let's say, one or two sides of the home, and the other two, just from the nature of where the hail came, half the house was affected, the other half wasn't. And the hail, and there, that would be typically a covered claim. But the problem is the vinyl was installed 10 years earlier, and it faded. So therefore, while it's the original color, it is, because of fading over time, it doesn't perfectly match the other two sides. And that's a situation where insurers typically try to work with a homeowner to try to get that house to the pre-loss condition. But again, every claim is unique, and I think you have to deal with your insurance carrier on a case-by-case basis. On auto, if you have a car that is parked in the driveway, meaning it's not covered by a garage or a carport or something like that, that would be typically covered under the comprehensive provision of your auto policy. So comprehensive is different from collision. Comprehensive covers things like the side mirror breaks off, or you have a windshield that cracks, or something like that. If you have comprehensive coverage under your auto policy, typically that sort of damage is covered.
Thank you for that. Dave, anything to add to that?
No, Jonathan did a fantastic job explaining it. Evelyn, let me ask you a quick question. Have you recently had a situation or just asking about the future?
Unfortunately, Evelyn's she's no longer live on the call.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
I don't believe we've had any hail damage in Berks County this year, but a few years ago, it was epic. Trouble was then trying to even get an insurance adjuster because they were so busy trying to assess all the damage. So, Hugh, do we have time for another call, or are we up to the closing now?
We have time for one more. Let's go to Brian. Brian, go ahead. You're live with Senator Schwenk and guests.
Hi. Hi, everybody on the panel. Hope everybody's doing well.
Thanks, Brian.
Judy, I sent you and Mark some pictures of water on Creek. That's my issue.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I'm here since 1972, the year after Agnes, so I've seen this creek go up and down. What I'm seeing right now is a massive buildup of debris, especially at the bridge here in Reading Crest. And the way I view that bridge, if that gets blocked, it's like a funnel. So anything that can't come through the bridge or downstream is going back up through Temple, Earl, and other areas of the township. And I'm looking at a pipe right now. So I think it's a 3-foot drain pipe from a holding pond and a development up above. The sediment is up to the bottom of that right now. And eventually it's going close that pipe off. And with all the new development stuff, this creek is being taxied pretty good. And what we need to, I feel we need to do, we need to clean this out in this area I'm looking at right now. I'm looking at a creek right now, and the banks are getting eroded. I'm looking at trees that are here for 30 years, and I can see the roots in them, the trees at the along the creek. And what's going to eventually happen, them trees are going to collapse, fall down into the creek, and end up causing a barricade of water flow. Now, the damage I had is a storm sewer back up in the floor drain, and that was probably because down on Hayne Avenue, downstream from me, the street was flooded, and that water was probably going into a sanitary sewer, which caused my backup. Now, for people who had that trouble, I want to just leave them know, there is something in by for a check valve you put in the floor drain, and it closes the water from coming up in the floor drain. So that may help people listening. But right now, my issue is the Laurel Run Creek along Muhlenberg Township property. I mean, it needs to be cleaned.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand too, and that's why we're gonna get DEP to come out and look at it. I don't know exactly what they'll allow to happen there. But this is going to continue to happen because you're right, the buildup has gotten so high that it's just full of debris and sediment.
Even old Clover Farms truck that was being used for storage washed down and blocked the bridge on the east side of the bridge in Reading Crest. I don't know if you saw photographs of that or not.
No, I didn't see that, no.
Hmm. Yeah, a crane had to come down and take it out. Now, when that came down through, that's restricting the water flow going downstream, so areas in Temple and stuff, they couldn't evacuate the water like they should have. And the area I'm looking at right now along township property from Reading Crest Avenue down to the river, it has to be clean, especially this area I'm looking at, the bridge. And if you don't clean it out, it's going back of the water more. It's going to restrict the water flow from the Temple and upstream and Laurel Run Creek. Now, mm-hmm. I'd be willing to meet with anybody from any department and explain to them and show them photographs I have. Like I said, I've been here since 1972, so I have a good history of what it's like.
Yeah, you've seen it all.
I know. And Blue Marsh was a big help. So if we can get this water flowing through Laurel Run Creek faster to get to the Schuylkill, the Schuylkill and the Topahawken now can handle it because of Blue Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to get the water from Temple and everything upstream from where I'm sitting at right now. We got to get it moving. And my concern is right now while I'm looking at, I'm sitting here right now looking at a creek, and there's so much buildup here. Yeah. Like I said, around, I'm just guessing around 98, Mark Rossi, I told him about it, and he took action somehow through state permits and stuff. They did do an excellent job of cleaning up, but it is long overdue, long overdue.
We sent the letter together, actually, to DEP, Representative Rossi, and I, and so we'll follow up. Don't worry. So thank you.
Brian, thank you very much. Senator, we're coming down the home stretch now. I know you have some concluding remarks for those that have joined us and your guests.
Oh, thank you, Hugh. First of all, let me thank everyone who called in tonight or who's been listening, you know, those who you had some great questions, which I really appreciate. It sounds like we could have gone a little bit longer, but I especially want to thank my guests and repeat that we couldn't have had a better team of people to talk about these issues. And we're here, you know, if you didn't get your question answered, you can call in and we can refer it to the appropriate person. But Brian, thank you as always for the work that you do. You're a guy who is busy 12 months of the year on all kinds of issues that are happening in our community. Thanks for your service, Gene. Thank you, too. Kumru Township is very fortunate to have you. And, of course, Dave and Jonathan, you've got significant expertise on the insurance part of this. And, homeowners need to have all this information. So thank you so much for what you have provided. And if anybody does have any additional questions or has a follow-up, you can call my office at 610-929-2151 or visit my website at senatorschwank.com. There's a contact form on there. You can fill that out. We will get back to you. So, again, thank you, everyone, and have a good evening. Hugh, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, thank you. Senator, again, the phone number for the Senator's office is 610-929-2151. Thank you very much for participating in Senator Schwenk's telephone town hall. You've been a wonderful audience, and enjoy the rest of your evening.